Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Kaelin Davenport, lecturer in Roman history at Macquarie University. This is episode LXXXIII, Didius Julianus. Enraged at the lack of a decent bonus, the Praetorian Guards have cut down the newly installed Emperor Pertinax, and resolve to sell the throne to the highest bidder. Stepping forward with a sufficient bank balance is Didius Julianus, a man with a proven track record with both the military and the Senate. What could go wrong? Year of the Five Emperors, take two. Here's Kaelin Davenport.
The Praetorian Guards rarely have a plan. Usually it's the Praetorian Prefect who calls the shots there. But in this case, there is no plan for who is going to be emperor next after Pertinax. The guards are essentially left in a position where they are once again kingmakers. So the Praetorian Guards decide to auction off the empire to the highest bidder. We saw under Pertinax that they were unhappy with how much they were being paid. They didn't like the fact they were only going to get a donative of 12,000 sesterces at his accession. So now's an opportunity to auction off the empire to get as much money as they possibly could.
So who's going to give us the most? That person can be the emperor.
Exactly.
It's amazing that the role of emperor has become a commodity that's actually degraded to this point where it's up to the highest bidder.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Dio talks about it as one of the most disgraceful things that have ever happened in the history of the Roman Empire. I mean, the Roman emperor is supposed to be the best man in the state, but this action is sort of like the final acknowledgement of the reality of imperial power. Yes, the emperors are ratified by the Senate, and they are theoretically the head of the Senate, but in order to guarantee their power, they need the support of the army.
Mm.
And that may seem simplistic, but when push comes to shove, that's the essence of how Rome works.
Okay, so I'm being a bit flippant here.
That's okay.
So they bring out the gavel, they go, the auction is open for bidders. The Senate would probably go, what the hell?
Mm.
And then quickly start putting forward people to bid, I suppose. So what happens at this point? Who gets put forward or who decides that they want the role enough to play along with this?
Well, the first person is Flavius Sulpicianus, who is the father-in-law of Pertinax. So he's urban prefect at the time. He was made urban prefect by Pertinax, and as urban prefect, he controls the urban cohorts. So he does control some military force already, but it's the Praetorians who are auctioning off the empire. However, he's not necessarily the most promising candidate as far as Praetorians are concerned. You know, they've just murdered his son-in-law.
Mm.
So what's going to happen when he becomes emperor? At the same time, another illustrious senator called Didius Julianus has turned up at the Senate House for a meeting only to find out that Pertinax has been killed and find out what's going to go on. Now, Didius Julianus rushes off to the Praetorian Guard to the camp, and he's not allowed to enter the camp, but he stands before the Praetorian gate and basically shouts his bids to the soldiers.
So the soldiers are inside auctioning it off.
Yes.
And there's bids coming. Well, they can't exactly phone it in at the time, so you've got to stand outside the gates and yell it out.
We have Flavius Sulpicianus, and he's inside the Praetorian camp. Then Didius Julianus is standing outside. Now, there's different stories whether he was at the Senate House and then rushes off the Praetorian camp, or the negative version is that he was enjoying a rather nice dinner. There's lots of stories about Didius Julianus being a bit of a glutton and turns up, according to Herodian, with his entourage, his group of parasites. Now, Didius Julianus can't get inside and therefore shouts out his bids, and then a soldier runs to Sulpicianus and tells him how much Didius Julianus has bid, and the soldier runs back and forth.
Yeah.
As the bidding goes on. It would be funny if it wasn't so awful. So Sulpicianus, in the end, offers 20,000 sesterces per soldier, And that's as much as Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus had offered when they came to power.
Not that it was an offer then, though, sorry.
They'd given it. Yes, you're right. It's a donative. Yeah. We're giving this your free will.
But now that's almost saying this is how much I think it's worth,
yes.
This position.
Yes. Whereas Didius Julianus then tops that. He goes 5,000 sesterces per man more. So 25,000 sesterces per head.
Yeah.
The Praetorian Guard go with that. It's a higher number. You know, he shows them his boxes of money. So he not only has more in his bank, but he's also not the father-in-law of Pertinax.
Right. Okay.
And that really does tip the scales. Didius Julianus becomes imperator by buying the empire at auction.
Wow. That's an amazing slide in the prestige of being an emperor. I can't believe that Rome was okay with that going on.
Well, I don't think that they were okay with it, the sense that they really didn't have much other choice but to put up with the Praetorians.
Yeah.
Because when the Praetorian Guard are introduced into the city of Rome, and there's this wonderful bit in Tacitus's annals when he talks about all the Praetorian cohorts being put together in one camp under Sejanus during the reign of Tiberius. I mean, these are the people who are allowed to be armed in the city of Rome.
Mm.
So they control who is going to be emperor in moments like this. And one of the conditions of being proclaimed emperor is that he wouldn't do anything against Sulpicianus. So Sulpicianus wasn't going to be killed or murdered or just quietly disappear somehow. Mm. This is a way to establish the fact that even though he'd bought the empire at auction, he was going to be a good emperor.
So who was Didius Julianus then? What do we know about his background?
Well, he's probably about 60 years old now. So he's another senior senator. And he really has had quite an illustrious career in the imperial service. He's someone else who has served Marcus Aurelius and then also Commodus. So he's risen up through the senatorial cursus honorum, that cursus of officers. He's been a legionary legate, so that means he's commanded legions. And he's governed some of the most prestigious provinces in the empire. So, for example, like Germania Inferior. And he's also been proconsul of Africa, which is one of the top senatorial posts. He's a man of wide experience.
Mm.
Against that, we should set the fact that he's not remembered very fondly because of the way that he wins the empire. He doesn't come off very well in Cassius Dio's Roman history. Dio's a bit nervous when Didius Julianus comes to the throne because Dio had prosecuted him in legal cases before. You don't really want someone that you've prosecuted then becoming
your boss.
Becoming your boss, exactly. And the life of Didius Julianus in Historia Augusta is very dubious. It goes for all the cliches about what a gluttonous, wanton emperor he was. And that's really because he was someone who's defeated by Septimius Severus. And, you know, winners write the history, as it were. The life of Didius Julianus in the Historia Augusta is one of the lesser lives or the lives of usurpers. So generally, those lives about properly recognized emperors, you know, Hadrian, Antoninus Pius, Marcus Aurelius, Septimius Severus, they're the better lives because they're generally based on reliable evidence. And the author does then extrapolate, indulge some fantasies based on that. Whereas the lives of usurpers or short-lived emperors, they still want to write a biography of them, but they have to fill in the gaps. So they often go full throttle on the fantasies and make things up.
So is there anything that we can point to as vaguely concrete that we could know about his career, say under Commodus or something like that?
Definitely. So he was a provincial governor under Commodus of Germany, Africa. He was also consul with Pertinax in 175. So he had held, you know, the supreme magistracy at the same time as the previous emperor. They were peers. And he'd got into trouble a number of times during the reign of Commodus and had been exiled. But, you know, that would win him brownie points amongst fellow senators who had also suffered under Commodus.
Yes.
So there'd be something that would be a tick in his box there. And he was also known as a good military commander as well. For example, suppressing invasion by the Chalci. So, you know, theoretically, he was capable of being emperor. Capax imperii in Tacitus's words. You know, he was someone who could one day be emperor. But I think the fact that he essentially bought the empire at auction and then later what he went on to do really blotted his copybook as far as the senators were concerned.
All right, so let's talk about what he went on to do because he's not emperor for all that long.
No, he's only emperor for a couple of months, 28th of March to the 1st or 2nd of June.
So what's day one like for him? He's emperor, the Senate are okay with it, they're not happy with how it's come about?
Yeah, he goes to the Senate. That's what you have to do. The soldiers have proclaimed you emperor. That's great, but you have to get the ratification of the Senate. And generally, they're not going to say no when you turn up, as Didius Julianus did, with the soldiers at his back. It's a very different message he's sending from Pertinax, who was also acclaimed by the soldiers, but then tried to represent himself as just another senator. So he turns up in the Senate House with soldiers, but he says, "I am here alone," which is patently false, because he's got soldiers all around the Senate House. And so he's starting off sending a message of fear. He's trying to instill fear in the fellow senators. Now, perhaps he's seen what Pertinax had done and it didn't work. So he's gone completely to the other direction. But it doesn't start off well with the Senate, particularly when the soldiers start calling him Commodus. It very often happens. It happened with the death of Nero as well. Otho was sometimes called Nero. No, it's because people who like Nero or Commodus and benefit from their regime, as the soldiers had with Commodus, want those days be restored again. So they started acclaiming Didius Julianus as Commodus.
Right, so see it as a continuation in their eyes.
Exactly. It's back to the good old days. But of course, that's really going to get the senators offside as well. But also the people. And this is something that's really interesting in Cassius Dio's history, is the role of the Roman people in all these events. After the Senate House, he goes to the Palatine. Cassius Dio tells us, and this is Book 74, Chapter 13, what happens when Didius Julianus goes to the palace after being claimed emperor by the Senate. He says, "And finding the dinner that had been prepared for Pertinax, he made great fun of it. And sending out to every place from which by any means whatever something expensive could be procured at that time of night, he proceeded to gorge himself, and while the corpse was still lying in the building, and then to play at dice." So he mocks Pertinax's modest dinner. It's not good enough. So he sends out for better food and then engages in this gluttonous act while the body of Pertinax, this respected senator and then emperor, is lying there rotting away, essentially.
Yeah, isn't even dead and cold yet, and he's already acting like that.
It's a shocking image, actually.
Yeah, and that's from Dio. That's not even from the Augustan histories.
Yeah, it's from Cassius Dio. I mean, certainly he's anti-Didius Julianus, but I'd see no reason to disbelieve this. I mean, Didius Julianus is trying to cast himself as someone who's very different from Pertinax. Plus, you know, imagine you just bought the Roman Empire at auction. I'm sure the power would run to many people's heads, you know. The next morning, he heads down to the Senate House again, and here the people start to make their feelings known. That they're shouting out that he stole the empire, that he was a parasite, that he killed the pater patriae, he killed the father of the empire, Pertinax. And then he starts to order people who've gathered outside the Senate House in the Roman Forum to be killed. And that's never going to end well, is it? Because you're showing not only are you ruling ostentatiously with support of the soldiers, you're also going to kill fellow Romans. A good emperor was supposed to be what we call a civilis princeps, a prince who behaves civilly as if he is a fellow citizen, whereas Didius Julianus is behaving like an autocrat. So the people seize arms, whatever they can carry, and they rush to the Circus Maximus. And this is one way of the people to make their feelings known. You know, you go to a large public entertainment venue and you sit there chanting.
This is what they did during the fall of Perennius, I think.
Yes, exactly, to try and bring him down.
Same arena, you go there to be seen and have a bit of a rally. So they're doing the same thing here.
Yeah, and we mustn't forget, I mean, very often when we talk about the imperial system, we focus on emperors, senators, and soldiers. But we really can't also forget the voices of the Roman people here. And here they're gathering. They're not just gathering protesting against Didius Julianus. They're also calling on Pescinius Niger, who is governor of Syria, to save them.
Wow, yeah.
So they're looking for other potential emperors. And they may well have heard by now that Pescinius Niger, all the way over in Syria, had declared for the purple. But this is a way of saying we're not happy with the current government. And it's really going to encourage other senatorial generals, when they hear about this, to march on Rome. And so by getting people offside, by killing the people, that really matters.
So with there clearly being a bit of a negative reaction towards the emperorship of Didius Julianus, the rest of the empire is going to react. Paniscus is being called upon by Rome itself to rise up. What happens around the empire?
Yes, so in response to the death of Pertinax, three other senatorial generals declare for the purple. Piscinius Niger in Syria, and he's governor of the largest province in the east. He has three legions under his direct command in Syria, and he also gets support from fellow governors in the region. And certainly if you're in the east, that's a good position to be in because you can control Egypt and therefore the grain supply to Rome. The challenger in the middle of the empire is Septimius Severus, who is governor of Pannonia Superior. And we know that he declares for the throne on the 9th of April. So that's not long after the murder of Pertinax on the 28th of March.
Yeah, that's less than 2 weeks.
So news reaches there pretty quickly and he is acclaimed emperor. You also have the governor of Britain, Clodius Albinus, who has three legions under his control in Britain, who also declares in April of 193. So you have three other leading senatorial generals with legions at their back, the British army, the Danubian army, and the Syrian army, who declare in opposition to Didius Julianus. Like the Year of the Four Emperors, we also have senators declaring outside Rome in the provinces because they've got an army. And this is what Tacitus says in his histories when he talks about the Year of the Four Emperors, is that the secret of empire had been revealed and emperor could be made outside Rome. And we're finding that happening again. So not only the soldiers in Rome important, you have to have the support of the soldiers in the provinces as well.
Okay, so if we could take the action back to Didius Julianus now. He's declared himself emperor. He's got Rome. He's got the city. He's got the Senate. He's got the Praetorian Guards. He's going to have to start to govern in some respect, at the same time being worried about the outside competition. So what does he do in Rome in the limited time that he has?
Well, firstly, he tries to set up a dynasty. So his wife, Manilia Scantilla, is declared Augusta, and so is his daughter, Didia Clara. It's all business as usual here. You know, the dynasty is going to continue. He also declares Septimius Severus a public enemy, or he has the Senate declare Septimius Severus a public enemy, because he's the nearest of the three rivals. You know, you can march from Pannonia Superior down to North Italy and then on to Rome. And he then starts to prepare himself and Rome for war. So he sends soldiers out to meet Septimius Severus, but they defect because, you know, you've got a man here with several legions from the Danubian army marching on Rome versus Didius Julianus, who commands the Praetorian Guard. Of course, that's a great force, but they're also seen as not quite as battle-hardened as the legions from the Danube. So he starts to fortify the city of Rome. According to Cassius Dio, he does this very ineptly. Praetorian Guard aren't very good engineers. We mustn't forget that Rome at this period has outgrown the Servian walls of the early Republican period, and we don't yet have the Aurelianic walls, which wouldn't be built until the late 3rd century, that sort of circuit you can see outside Rome today. Essentially, you know, there's no defences. He has to get the Praetorians to engineer some, but they're not used to that type of building, so it doesn't go very well. He also, and Cassius Dio tells us this, I still can't believe it, he gets the elephants, which are meant for the games, to try and, you know, help defend the city of Rome. Surely, you know, a sign of desperation. Didius Julianus is no Hannibal. The elephants aren't going to turn out well.
Is Rome a big user of elephants in warfare?
No, they're meant for to be killed in the Colosseum.
Yeah, they're meant for games.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Well, very often they'd reenact historical events. So they may have been reenacting Hannibal's battles in Italy, but the Romans aren't using them for warfare. But Didius Julianus is desperate. And Cassius Dio, obviously, is writing the benefit of hindsight, but writes at how amusing he and his fellow senators found this. So Didius Julianus starts to get desperate. He offers to share the power, share the throne with Septimius Severus. And this is clearly an act of desperation. Because previously when we had co-emperors like Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus, that was a succession plan thought up by Hadrian and it was very harmonious. Whereas this, you know, to try and set up a joint regime with a man who's marching on Rome, it's not going to end well.
It's a desperate last bid to make a deal, I suppose, to try and make the best out of your situation.
Definitely. You know, he's a desperate man. He's stuck in Rome. Mm. And, you know, people are defecting. He sends out a senatorial embassy to Severus, and they change sides to Septimius Severus as well.
Mm.
And Septimius Severus, you know, puts out his propaganda message. He is the avenger of Pertinax, you know, this great senatorial general who was unjustly killed. And he offers clemency to the people of Rome if those that killed Pertinax are themselves killed. So if Pertinax's murder is avenged. And even though Didius Julianus did not directly kill Pertinax, he was, you know, someone who took advantage of the situation.
Mm.
Cassius Dio says, "We thereupon sentenced Julianus to death, named Severus emperor, and bestowed divine honours on Pertinax." So the Senate is taking action here in response to what Septimius Severus is telling them. And men are sent by the Senate to kill Didius Julianus as he is reclining in the palace, as Cassius Dio tells us. Cassius Dio gives us his last words. "But what evil have I done? Whom have I killed?" It's rather disingenuous, I think, given his actions towards the people who he killed when they protested. I guess what he's saying is that I didn't actually kill Pertinax, so why have I been declared a public enemy? But certainly the Senate saw the writing on the wall there. Septimius Severus marching on Rome, making himself the avenger of Pertinax, that's going to be the much better option in the long run.
It's interesting as well that Dio puts himself there as one of the senators who gave the death sentence. "We thereupon sentenced Julianus to death," taking responsibility for that.
Very much so. I mean, this is part of the later books of Cassius Dio's history, where he is essentially an eyewitness, and he very often uses the first person plural. "We did this." He's part of this group of senators. Sometimes he does so in order to sort of portray himself as the voice of the Senate, so that all senatorial experiences are the same as his. But here, you know, we can definitely trust his account. You know, they are doing this because it's for the good of Rome.
Mm. How tumultuous. There's two emperors gone for the year.
Didius Julianus is either killed on the 1st or the 2nd of June. So he's declared a public enemy on the 1st of June. Mm. And he's either killed in the palace that day or the following day.
Yeah.
So
that's five, six months.
Five months has gone. Yeah. We've had two emperors. And I think this is testament to the chaos which follows the demise of a well-established dynasty. I mean, after the death of Commodus, you know, there have been no members of the Antonine dynasty around. The surviving sons-in-law of Marcus Aurelius, like Claudius Pompeianus, didn't want to step up. Mm. So you have this power vacuum into which these powerful senatorial generals are making their claim to the throne.
So with the execution of Didius Julianus, the role of emperor is again free, and they've got Septimius Severus on the doorstep of Rome. Mm. So I assume he just rolls right in with the troops.
Very much so. I mean, he betrays himself as the avenger of Pertinax, you know, this unjust murder. But as we'll see, he also tries to link himself to the Antonine dynasty. So he's trying to show that there is continuity. The reign of Pertinax and Didius Julianus particularly are aberrations, that continuity of Roman rule is going to continue.
That's Dr. Kaelin Davenport, lecturer in Roman history at Macquarie University, and you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts or your friendly neighbourhood podcasting service. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Kaelin on Twitter. Kaelin is at Dr. C. Davenport, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, the Empire starts to emerge from the chaos under the leadership of the new Emperor, Septimius Severus. Not a Harry Potter character. So until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.